Hi, I'm Danica Johnson.
And I'm Crystal DeConte.
And we're Champion Chat 360.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Champion Chat 360. Today it's just the two of us. Just the two of us. Do I sing this every time? It's just you and I. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
What a great song.
Yeah, it is a really good one.
I guess I never really listened to the lyrics of that one.
It was a good one. It's a good one that that in Will Smith redid it to with his son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So just Danica and I, and we're going to talk about something that's pretty, I guess, important or personal to us slash pretty much Danica. And that's going to be all about diabetes and what her experience with diabetes is. We're going to talk about how she found out, how she's dealt with it in her life, maybe how it's changed or how her family deals with it, being a mom and a daughter and a wife. And then we'll talk a little bit about the questions that we received, and Danica will shine some light on this. I don't know a whole lot about diabetes, so this will be a lot of Danica, and then I'll ask her questions. If you have any other questions after this, you can obviously reach out to Danica, but obviously reach out to your doctor first and foremost. Do we want to just get right into where you are? I don't think we need to kind of, yeah.
I can get right into it. So growing up, I was just an active kid. I guess I was your average kid when it came to like super, super, like, busy, always active, always outside playing, would love ice cream for dinner if I had the opportunity every single night. I played sports growing up, and probably around the age of, like, 10, still continued, like, all activity. My appetite was the same, and I was always known to, like, out-eat my dad, and I was just like a beast. I had like a good, healthy appetite growing up. So that didn't change. But my mom started to notice that I was becoming sluggish and didn't really want to go out and play as much. I would come home and want to take naps, which was just not like me. And then I would lock myself in the bathroom. I would just sit underneath the faucet because I couldn't get enough water. And I was constantly thirsty. So even, I remember this was probably fifth grade right now. So fifth grade, we were in science class and I kept on falling asleep in class. And I was like, come on, Danica, like I actually liked science in that grade. I liked science, but I would always excuse myself during that point of the school day and go and just sit like in front of the water fountain. So my mom noticed like, she's in the bathroom a lot, drinking water all the time. She's taking naps, which is unusual. And I was losing a lot of weight and it didn't make sense. Like things didn't add up because my activity level was decreasing, but my appetite wasn't decreasing. So went to the doctor, like any mom should do. The doctor immediately took urine and came back in the room and said, Danica needs to go to the hospital immediately. She has type 1 diabetes. And then my mom was like, okay, can we take blood work? Like, can we finish this? Like, I don't understand what's happening. And they were like, sure, we're pretty positive. And she was like, well, let us just go home first. Like, this is a really big diagnosis. And so went home to get all of our stuff, took blood because they wanted to confirm some things, took blood at that point, then went home, got some things. And as we were walking into the door, the phone was ringing. My mom got the phone call and the doctor was like, yes, she needs to go to the hospital immediately. And I just remember my mom dropping to the floor and me being like, what's wrong? Like, what is the matter? What's wrong? So my mom was actually nannying at that time. So we were at the person that she nannies, his house. And I was friends with the daughter and the dad was like, Kim, what's going on? Like, what's going on? And my mom, like, couldn't talk. She was just hysterical. Jim was his name, ended up bringing us to the hospital. And then from then on, Christy, it was probably a whirlwind. Like, I remember getting hooked up to an IV immediately, having doctors come in, getting shots, having them, like, have a nutritionist come in. I had a priest come in and say some prayers over my bed. And I was like, what is happening? Like, what is going on? My dad was hysterical. My parents at the time were getting a divorce. And so my dad came in afterwards with his girlfriend, now wife, and just everybody was like hysterical. And I'm thinking, yes, I prefer grape flavor over cherry for the medicine, please. And as long as you could give me that, that'd be great. And let's wrap it up because I got shit to do. So that clearly didn't happen. And from that day forward, I had to rewire so much of my life. And they started off back then, you have to, that was, what, early 90s? So I was 11 years old. The information that was given back then, if they gave it now, they'd probably get punched in the face because it wasn't good information. They gave me, it was good for the time and like for the knowledge that they had then. So essentially what they told me was, you have this little organ and it's called your pancreas, and your pancreas produces insulin, and your insulin opens up those cells, it unlocks the cells, opens up the cells, allows for nutrition to come in and get absorbed so that your body can function, so that the food that you eat can be properly metabolized, and so that the cell can transport everything where it needs to go, and like, and everything is good. If you don't have insulin, the food that you eat is not necessarily being absorbed at all, and it's kind of just floating around. This is how they told me, floating around in your bloodstream. And that is poison, and you can die. And I was like, oh, well, shit. Let's start that insulin. Like, what do I do now? And then they just told me, all right, so you need to start taking shots. You need to start. I had a dietitian come in. I had counseling, where they taught me how to count carbs. They gave me books about, everything was at that point on revolved around food. So my food, my activity. So they said, what do you eat in a typical day? We're gonna cut it in half, and that's a lot. Right now we need to just focus on maintaining your blood sugar. These are a list of good foods. These are a list of bad foods. These are your free foods, like free foods that I could just eat however much I wanted and I didn't necessarily have to measure, which was like pickles. I was like, I love pickles. This is great. So I had a lot of calculating that I had to do. I felt like I was in a math class 24/7 of figuring out how to, like, I manually had to become my pancreas. And I had to do its job because it no longer was doing its job. So I had to calculate insulin and calculate how many carbohydrates I was going to eat, calculate my activity level. Yeah, it was a lot. It was just a lot. So if I give people like an idea of like what is type 1 diabetes, just like a general definition, I'll read it for people. So type 1 diabetes, it was formerly known as juvenile diabetes because usually the onset is during the younger years, not typically teenage or above. So there are different types of diabetes, and we can talk about that later. But this is type 1 diabetes, formerly known as juvenile diabetes. It's a chronic autoimmune condition that makes the body unable to produce insulin. Insulin is produced by your pancreas. So this is a hormone that regulates blood sugar. Without insulin, our bodies cannot use the sugar in our bloodstream as energy, causing people to experience a diabetic ketoacidosis, which just means your blood sugars are way out of whack, and and you aren't absorbing, as I said before, you aren't absorbing the nutrients that you're putting into your body. So that's essentially what it is. It's an autoimmune disease. They do not know necessarily the cause of it. There's a lot of guesses out there. I think that when we don't know the cause of things, we often go to stress or trauma, or we do lead towards like what happened in our bodies to have them freak out. Stress and trauma can absolutely make our bodies freak out. Another piece of it is slight genetics, that nobody in my family has type 1 diabetes. Nobody has type 2 diabetes. There's no diabetes in my family whatsoever. So that is not the case for me. So we have no idea why I was diagnosed or what happened, other than my body decided to kind of attack itself.
Sounds, from everything you said, it sounds like you've been in prep since you were 11.
That I've been in prep since I was 11? Yeah. So I feel like I absolutely have. And so the way that it's like really influenced my life, I think for like the biggest part is food and how food is for me. Mm-hmm. And it has come up recently because I am a mommy, right? And because I am in the health and fitness field, I am working with clientele that I'm telling them to calculate food and everything, and while trying to keep a healthy mindset, I'm working with clients with eating disorders. I like health, fitness, food is part of that. And being a mommy, being a wife that wants to like prepare food, like food is all around us. And the holidays came up, holidays and food, they're just like two peas in a fucking pod. And I don't necessarily have the same emotional attachment or relationship when it comes to food because of my type 1 diabetes diagnosis. Now, there are probably some type 1 diabetics that could say, I love food and I have such a great relationship with it and it's amazing, and that's awesome. Like, every type 1 diabetic is different. Every person with any type of illness, I think, kind of handles it in their own way. But from the age of 11, I was told to see food as a number and to do a mathematical equation every single time I was about to eat something. And there were pivotal moments in my life that I wanted to just be able to enjoy food. And that joy was often stripped away because it had to, a math equation had to come first. So I just learned to, well, shit, like, if, like, what's the point of me having a emotional relationship with food if, like, it always has to come second? Like, I just kind of dismissed it. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've operated for so many years of my life. Since age 11, that's how I've operated. And every time I tried to bring joy back in, I always had a high blood sugar. I'd be like, shit, it's not even worth it. So, but that's okay. Like, I've learned to come to grips with it and be like, but that's how I am able to kind of handle things in my own life and how it works for me. What I'm learning, though, is that that's not normal. And as it shouldn't be. Like, it should not be normal. And I am not normal. I'm not your typical individual when it comes to food. I'm just not. And I often found myself questioning when others would get really excited about things because I genuinely didn't understand it. Like, I would be like, I just don't understand, like, why a piece of chocolate cake brings you so much joy. And, like, to them, they'd be like, are you serious? Like, what do you mean? Uh-huh. And I had reason for it. Like, I had good reason for it. And I'm learning that, like, if my little quirks and little my relationship with food is helping me to increase the longevity of life, like me being around with my daughter a little bit longer, like, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather I would rather view food as fuel and numbers more often than not, and have a longer life. Does that make sense? And I think I had to come to grips with that as of recent because, well, Ravenna's around people who want to show love through food. And I, too, want to be able to do that. But I can't necessarily in, I guess, the way that others do. And I have to try to navigate through that and appreciate it, appreciate how others view it, and appreciate, like, how I've grown up with diabetes and that it will, I am able to do things. Like, I want to clarify a few things because people are probably thinking, but you can eat whatever you want. Very true. I can eat whatever I want, however much I want to, but the calculating to do so is just annoying that I choose not to, because I'd rather just not have to go through the calculations so much. And I think that being a mommy now makes me obviously see things through her eyes, and I want her to have joy in food, and I also want her to be very understanding when it comes to food. I want her to be understanding when it comes to people's little quirks with food or what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy. I just want her to have a good understanding of health and joy, because food is joyous. Mm-hmm. It just is not as joyous for me. Mm-hmm. That's all.
So I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it is, why does it bring up emotion in you to, and I'm going to kind of answer some of the question, I guess, feel like you're missing out on, let's just say, ice cream. Someone being able to take Venna for ice cream. Why does that bring up emotion in you when you don't have an emotion tied to the food?
I think it is more of the ability to do so. Like, not feeling controlled it's not that I don't have the ability to do so. I do, but I want to be able to do it without thought and without a question of, or without a feeling of anxiety, because food does bring me anxiety, because I'm always thinking, man, did I calculate that right? Is it going to be high? And if I'm high, how do I recalculate that and make a correction? Like, I don't want all those feelings to arise if I'm just going to bring my daughter out for ice cream. Like, it should just be let's pick out something that we want to both share, mm-hmm. and have this experience of sharing an ice cream cone together without me, like, having to measure or think about what are the repercussions going to be if I have this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just being able to do something without thought. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
No, it makes 100. Like I said, I already knew the answer, but yes, it makes sense. I'm sure it makes sense to the people. So meaning, like, it's not as carefree for you to just be like, let's just go do this, because you can't just go do this, because you have to put pie, like, not pie, like, eat a pie, but, like, 3.1467, whatever the rest of the numbers are, into your head before, right. before you can put pie in your mouth. It's just a continuous math problem, like you said, so it makes the joy a little bit harder. I know some people might be, who don't know, could be like, well, just deal with it. And you're like, well, I do just deal with it. But the problem is other people don't know what's going on, so they first see, or they judge you thinking that, oh, it's, you know, she's just a health person and she doesn't want this. And then they take it personal because they're insecure about, first off, being around any kind of personal trainer. Can we all just agree that if you're around a personal trainer, don't ask them about your food and diet unless you're in a consult, and don't ask them what they're doing because you're not going to listen anyway, and then you're just going to feel judged and everyone's just going to be annoyed.
Right, so just remove that from the equation.
Right. It's like we should not talk about, like, macros, politics, and religion.
Yes.
Let's just say.
And you know, I think I did it. I kind of created that for myself, which looking back, I wish that I didn't. I wish I wanted so badly at the age of like, so 11 or 12 was really tough because it was figuring stuff out. But there was also a point where, and this is even me coming to realize a lot of things, like I've realized just a lot about like my habits, what I do, my emotions. Recently, the holidays brought up so much stuff, but during like 11 to 12 years old, the focus was on me and like Danica and her diabetes, right? But I also still had two little brothers and my parents were going through a divorce and it was a rough divorce. So the way that I thought in my mind and in my heart was like, I don't want this to bother them. Like, I don't want to be a bother to them. I need to be able to take control of it and, like, put it away. And this isn't at the forefront. This isn't all of me. And I rolled with that through my teenage years. Like, I recreated things and an image. I created an image for myself. And then I went with it. Like, I continued to roll with it. And I would talk about it, but it was always like in the midst of a larger conversation. It was never the focus, like Danica Johnson with the type 1 diabetes. And I think to some extent that hurt me because a lot of the people close to me didn't have the full picture. So when it came to food, when it came to social gatherings, to holidays, to cooking and just being able to like go out to dinner, they always had this perception that, well, Danica's doing a show or Danica is, she'll bring her own food because she's big into health and fitness and she wouldn't eat this anyways. And I went with it because that's easier for most people to understand. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, fine, if that's how you want to wrap your head around it, that's fine. But there's so many other levels to it and layers that are way deeper than just, of course, I love health and fitness. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of shows that required me to be on a set meal plan. But even more so on top of that, I have to calculate every single thing. And to have somebody understand it, it's really hard for people to really understand the ins and outs of it. Even my husband is still learning about it and learning different things and how it affects my mood and how like pregnancy affected my blood sugar. The weather can affect your blood sugar and your insulin sensitivity. There's so many pieces of it that to sit down when somebody says, Danica, can't you just have a handful of blueberries? Well, yeah, I can. But in order to do so, and this is just a simple example, in order to do so, I'm going to test my blood sugar first. If it's in normal range, great. I'll measure out the blueberries, calculate how many carbs I'm going to have, and then administer the correct amount of insulin to cover that carb intake. If my blood sugar is not in good range, and say my blood sugar is in higher range, I need to make correction dose to get me back into normal range. Then calculate how many carbs I'm going to ingest. Then also administer the insulin to not only do the correction, but also cover the carbs. Now, who the hell wants to hear that? No. No one. Like, that's exhausting. Mm-hmm. You get bored. You get bored past the because. You're like, no, just grab it.
It's not boredom. It's just like, shit. I think if you actually explain that to some people, they might realize how much work you have to do just to eat.
Yes. So the way that I have handled things is to not let it impact those around me. But the truth is, it's going to impact those around me no matter what. Diabetes is going to impact everybody kind of that comes into your life in some way or another. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to understand it completely. I think that, you know, I just recently saw this post that I love. Renee posted it, and she said, I stopped explaining myself once I realized that people only understood on their conscious level.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I totally get it. Diabetes is complex. So if people want to say, well, of course she's not going to binge after a show because she just probably has an eating disorder. Okay. If that's what you want to think and you're not thinking, oh, shit, 500 cupcakes and Snickers bars and all of these, like, meals afterwards may put her in, like, a diabetic coma. If that's not what you want to focus on, cool. Cool, man. Then you're not that close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Like, I've learned to be, like, okay with it. And sometimes people still ask me, like, still have to be reminded because it's not your everyday thing. Mm-hmm. Like, how many type 1 diabetics do you know?
Right now in my life, you're the only one that's type 1.
Yeah, like, there are a lot of people with type 1 diabetes, mm-hmm. but when you really think about it, like, personally, you probably don't know that many.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so, like, in the world, there's a bunch of people.
Right.
But in your little circle, there's probably not. And that's another thing to kind of talk about, too, is because of that, because you don't know a lot of type 1 diabetics, you have to be careful not to just think, well, I know people with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely different.
Right.
So, and on television, all you hear and see are ads for type 2 diabetics, which is an adult onset diabetes, usually brought on through an unhealthy lifestyle and eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
And that is controllable. That is something that actually can be reversed and completely rid of. Mine is like, I have this like organ that's dead and just floating around,
mm-hmm.
and just chilling. Like, it is just everybody, every day they have a funeral for it. Like, man, you're still here. Dude,
maybe
move over.
Maybe it's more like, it's like Walking Dead in your stomach, and they just have constant, like, dead pancreas just circling, being like,
right. I think, you know, it's hard too to see type 2 diabetics in comparison to type 1, and depending on the extent of their diagnosis, but a lot of type 2 diabetics typically do enjoy, like, treats and then just take their medication really quick. Like, they're still producing a small amount of insulin in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And if they made healthier choices, they probably wouldn't have to take any medication whatsoever, and their pancreas would kind of reboot themselves more.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, also, being 11 years old, being diagnosed of having to manage diabetes is very different than being 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Already have kind of developed your relationship with food from that point, right?
Yeah.
And you're probably set in your ways.
Mm-hmm.
And for many, like, you're probably good and you probably have a love for food. At age 11, I was just getting started.
Mm-hmm. You like Captain Crunch? I know I did.
Yes. Like, even I was thinking about, like, little things like that. I've been reading a lot of, like, blogs about it, and one person said how she loves Lucky Charms and she loved to, like, put extra marshmallows. And then Lucky Charms turned into measuring out the Luckies and the Charms and, like, how many marshmallows can I actually have in this cereal. Well, at that point, do you look at your Lucky Charms, you're like, I can't wait to eat you. Like, no, because you get anxious and you have this sense of, oh my God, I'm going to be judged if I fail with my blood sugar. And you're told, like, doctors didn't do a really good job when my blood sugars were high. And I would say, even my parents, they didn't know, but whenever my blood sugars were high, I was very much, like, scolded. And it would be, like, going out halftime during field hockey and having some orange slices, which everybody was having, and then me having it and my blood sugar being high, and me being told, you can't do that. I'd be like, but it's in orange. Mm-hmm. Like, but everybody else is doing it. And it turned into really unhealthy eating habits. Like, unhealthy, like, for a while, it was my friends even getting in on it and being like, I stole a Pop-Tart for you. Here you go, because I know your parents won't let you have it. And me sneaking it, thinking like, oh my God, I have to sneak this food. Because if I was seen eating it, I would be judged and scolded. Mm-hmm. So imagine what that does to your psyche and your how it builds and molds your relationship with food. Not to mention you're hitting puberty.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a shit show. Like, that was like a sign. Yes. Could you please sign me up for this disordered eating? I would like to. I'd also like to have anxiety disorder, a little bit of depression. If you could just sign me up for all those things. Thank you.
Have you ever seen Big Mouth? That's a cartoon on Netflix. Not appropriate for kids, so don't play it. But they have the puberty like center, and everyone has a puberty monster. And then there's this one girl who's going through puberty, and she gets the depression cat because. So, yeah, it was pretty funny. Funny that you said it too. But anyway.
Yeah, I feel like at the doctor's office, every time I went in, they wouldn't prepare me for like the emotional pieces that diabetes would bring to me. Because I guess they didn't know either. They just said, do your numbers right. Mm-hmm. Like, make sure your numbers are right. Do your calculations right. They checked my weight, blood pressure, and that was it. Like, they never really dove deep into, like, how is this emotionally impacting you as a teenager? And how are you doing managing a life-threatening disease, like, at a young age?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it really has molded and shifted a lot of who I am today, and I think that I never really embraced it as much as I should have until now, which is interesting because now is a great time to do so, being a mommy and being able to embrace it a little bit more, being a mom. Mm-hmm. And I'm 34 years old, like, put your big girl pants on.
So, yeah, we can go into questions now since we kind of covered that. So one question is, let's just say we already covered the difference between one and two. Is there any other kinds besides we can talk about pregnancy diabetes, like gestational?
Yeah, so there is gestational diabetes, and that's usually brought on when you're pregnant. And a good idea of it. So it's a form of diabetes that affects pregnant women and occurs in 1 in 25 pregnancies caused by the malfunction of insulin receptors due to the presence of hormones from the placenta. It usually develops around the 24th week of pregnancy and will continue to affect both the mother and unborn child throughout the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. That is something that I actually know a few people that I know have had it. Mm-hmm. And it does tend to go away after you give birth. So I think that for about a month or two after, they typically are still testing your blood sugars as well as the newborn, just to make sure that your blood sugars are going into check. Some people have been actually put on medication for a longer period of time to help manage that. And that medication usually isn't insulin injections because your pancreas is still producing insulin.
Yep.
And you then are given pills. So it's actual pill that you are given to help manage the diabetes.
Interesting. How many times a day do you have to test yourself and then change accordingly for insulin?
So today, as I am today, I wear an Omnipod pump. So the Omnipod pump, I put 150 units of insulin in there. It stays on me for 3 full days. And throughout the course of the day, I am getting a basal rate of usually 0.75 units per hour. That's kind of given to me. So it acts as my pancreas would do. So that's without any intake of food. Just your pancreas is still going to kind of regulate your blood sugars. It's going to give you insulin as it sees needed. And your blood sugars will absolutely be affected by your activity level, your sleep patterns, any stress level that you have, any medication you might be on, if you're sick. Like I said, the weather, sometimes if it's really, really, really hot outside, your body is working in overdrive. So you might have a decrease in your blood sugar. So basal rate is just working all the time. Then on top of that, for every 12 grams of carbohydrates that I ingest, I take 1 unit of insulin. So on top of that, I am calculating throughout the day what I'm eating and then injecting through the pump and the meter how much insulin is required in order to cover whatever food that I'm about to take. I would say that I am currently testing 10 to 12 times a day. And the reason why, I would say the average amount for people is 5 to 6. But in the morning, I have a little bit of difficulty with the dawn phenomenon, which the dawn phenomenon, again, let me give you a really good definition. But your blood sugar is increased during like this. It is your cortisol levels kind of spiking in the morning, and then that is going to impact your blood sugar levels by increasing it. So it's essentially your body kind of dumping glucose, and then your cortisol levels are going to increase, and then you're waking up. So your body's waking up. Well, my pancreas doesn't know that. So if I have a dump of like anything in my body, and my pancreas was supposed to kind of be like, oh, yeah, I'm here, it's not going to. So the dawn phenomenon has been around, and I don't know why they call it a phenomenon because it makes perfect fucking sense.
Maybe that's what's happening with me.
It could totally be. Yeah, the dawn phenomenon. Let me give you a really good...
As she finds it, I'll tell you why I said it could be what's going on with me. So I've been testing my blood sugars because of prep, and a couple times it's much higher than it should be. I'd say my average or my span goes anywhere from 107 to 124 in the morning first thing, which is really pretty high for someone who is considered quote unquote healthy weight range, healthy foods, limits alcohol, especially during the weeks of prep, to pretty much no alcohol and active. And those numbers are slightly higher than a normal person, but go ahead if you want to read it now that you got it.
Yeah. So the dawn phenomenon is a surge of hormones, as I kind of said, that the body produces daily in the early morning hours before you wake up. So the rise in glucose is most likely because of your body is making less insulin and more glucagon than it needs. So glucagon signals the liver to break down glycogen into glucose. So it makes sense when you wake up in the morning, your body's like, oh, like rise and shine, like let's get going, and that burst of stuff. Well, typically what would happen is that your pancreas would adjust accordingly and increase the amount of insulin it's producing to make sure that you're still stable. I don't have that, and it's very, very hard to calculate. So a lot of people with type 1 diabetes, or I guess people in general, really, or someone who maybe has a lazy pancreas, that's something that is kind of known, like a lazy pancreas that just isn't like up and ready to go. So I can't calculate that because it's very much internal. Like I can't calculate what's going to happen. Like what is the dump that's going to happen? How are my like cortisol levels going to be changing? What is the increase of serotonin? Even like hormonally during the menstrual cycle, like I can't calculate those so precisely. So what typically happens is that you guesstimate for those hours, and it's usually for 3 to 4 hours in the morning where I can absolutely, it happens every single morning, I see a huge increase. And an increase in like, so today was a great example. I woke up and my blood sugar was 52, low. I did nothing. I had black coffee and went about my day. I didn't take any insulin because not needed. And then I tested and it was 175. Did nothing. Didn't ingest anything. Mm. It was just my body.
Yeah. Caffeine. caffeine, they say, does have, yeah. But that's a big jump with just caffeine. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason why I test so much, typically the morning hours, I test a lot. And then throughout the day, I'm always testing before a workout, sometimes mid-workout, after workout. I test before my meals, so, and after my meals to make sure my calculation is good. So, and I eat probably, depending on like our schedule, 4 to 6 times during the day. So I test a lot. Mm-hmm. And then before bed, I'm always testing just to make sure. Yeah. So there are other ways to kind of manage that. There are continuous glucose monitors, which again is just something that's attached to you, and you have to change about every 7 to 10 days. You have to change out the sensor, and that will be calculating your blood sugar 24/7. So it shows you trends. It shows you if your blood sugar is increasing, mm-hmm. decreasing. And what they don't necessarily have yet is a closed loop system where your Omnipod or any pump device that you're using can talk to the continuous glucose monitor, and they can just like talk to each other and mm-hmm. say, hey, we're going up, administer this much insulin. Mm-hmm. So they haven't really figured that out yet. There are some systems that are trying to do that, but people are still testing to make sure that is accurate.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing now. Before, I was taking injections. So I would inject myself probably 6 times a day. So I would draw up my insulin. When I first started, I had cloudy and clear. So I had cloudy, which was a long-acting insulin, which covered my whole entire day. And then I had clear, which was fast-acting, only when I needed to eat. So I would take cloudy in the morning and then clear every time I would eat. Mm-hmm. And those were like syringes. Could you imagine a little 11-year-old being like, making sure the air bubbles are getting out of the needle?
I was a camp counselor for like a summer camp, and I had a girl who was, I think I had either 4th and 5th graders, so she was in 4th or 5th grade, and she had to do it constantly, picking herself. Like, she did, like, no problem. She picked, lick, like, after she, like, tested, and then she had the one where she could turn it, almost like an EpiPen looking. Like, she would click it, she would turn it to get to, like, the right amount of insulin she needed.
Oh, yeah.
And then stick herself wherever. But I think she did it in her belly or something. I don't know.
That's really good. Yeah. That is, like, the Novolog pen. Mm-hmm. So it went from, like, vials with syringes, then to Lantus, and I had, like, Lantus and a Pedra, so still slow-acting, fast-acting. And then I went from that to the pump, which I've had for 6 years, mm-hmm. 7 years.
So a couple things. How has it affected or changed? Well, I guess it just affected. How has it affected your workouts?
So it absolutely has affected my workouts, because I have this nervous feeling every single time I start a workout that my blood sugar is going to drop. Mm-hmm. And once it drops, I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no tapping back in. I'm tapped out. Mm-hmm. Just because it feels like shit. So having like a low blood sugar and then coming back up from a low, like having a low blood sugar is, you're anxious, you're you have a cold sweat, you're shaky, you're weak, it just doesn't feel good. So, and then coming up, you literally feel like you are getting a hangover. So you're like coming up and then you start to have a headache. You don't just go back to feeling good, mm-hmm. even if your blood sugar goes back to normal. So it has made me more aware of my body and how to feel, like how to have those feelings and intuition, I guess, of like, where's my blood sugar at? How am I feeling? And I definitely am more mindful of what my blood sugar is when it starts, and then just keeping constant track of it. If I know that my blood sugar is, I think I even posted this, if I know that it's usually in like a 140 range, I typically tend to suspend my insulin or do a temp basal, which means I'm just increasing the amount of insulin that's going to be given to me. And that's been the way that I control it. I always have something on me. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like a fast acting like sugar, even like a glucose tablet. If I don't have a glucose tablet, Halloween is always great for me because those little packets of candy are mm-hmm. so helpful to just store in random places. I think I have a little packet of like Skittles or Swedish Fish or something in every pocketbook that I own. Mm-hmm. Just in case, and like little glucose tablets or glucose gels. So yep. It's helped me to be more prepared, I guess. When people are like, shit, I forgot my pre-workout, I'm more like, shit, I forgot my orange juice.
Yeah. So this is a kind of a funny snicker one, but what do you think when people say, well, Danica competes in a natural organization and she uses insulin, so she can dictate how much insulin she gives herself to make herself be more muscular or gain more muscle.
I mean, valid, right? Like, it's totally valid to think that. And I think that people should question it. But I also would go to, okay, you know what? If you want to have this and you would prefer to do this, please take it away from me because I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think that what I do is cool, you really have some things you need to work out internally because this is not cool and it's not fun and I don't want it. Like, it wasn't something I'm like, I can't wait to misuse this disease. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, but I get it. It's valid, right? Like, I guess you could absolutely argue that. Yeah, I think that that's a valid thing. I have had people kind of bring it up before or jokingly say, well, I wish I could just inject myself with insulin all the time. And I've looked at them like, huh.
One, you do.
I've never thought about that.
One, you probably do. If you're saying it to me, you probably right. have either A, thought of it, or do. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I know. Absolutely ridiculous. So a few questions that I actually got. One was, how is prepping with type 1 different than for somebody who doesn't? So it is the same thing that everybody else kind of does. It's the same mentality, the same like prep, except on top of that, I'm also calculating things because my life depends on it. So some challenges that might come up that others might not be faced with are, if I have a low blood sugar and I've already eaten all of my meals for the day, I need to take care of my blood sugar and I will have to go over my macros for the day. And I need to be okay with that. And my coach needs to be okay with that because my health comes first. So I think that's a big thing that would come up. Also, I think another thing is just the extra, like, the extra piece of calculating where people have measurements and they're measuring out like their food. I am measuring and measuring. Yeah. Like, there's a double layer of measuring. Mm-hmm. But I will say that is usually when my diabetes is the best, if that makes sense, because mm-hmm. everything is measured. I know exactly what I'm eating. Like, and for me, I am just on a meal plan. So having a meal plan, I eat the same thing every single day. The only thing that would impact my blood sugars would be a workout, hormones, stress, or like the weather changing, or being like my menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. So those are still a lot of things that impact your blood
right.
sugar.
Well, weather but doesn't really matter to me, but yeah.
Right. I don't have to think about like the food, I guess.
Right. That's another one you get.
So another question kind of that I got along with that was, how has it affected which coaches you choose? And do you only work with those familiar with it? Like I said before, I never let it define me, or I never put it up front first. So I always thought I have this under control and I don't want to burden anybody with it. So when I was choosing coaches in the very beginning, I never even thought about, like, let me see if they have experience with working with type 1 diabetics, because I felt like I confidently could just adjust accordingly and it wasn't going to, like, they were separate things for me. But what I will say is that choosing Andrew to be my coach, initially it very much was separate, but he also showed a great interest in my diabetes, and together we really like worked a lot with having type 1 diabetes, using the sauna for decreasing, maintaining healthy blood sugar levels. Like, there was a lot that I learned from him and vice versa. So I don't think that it was necessarily something that, as much as people would assume, influenced my choosing of a coach. But I am grateful that I have a coach who is knowledgeable in diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Other questions. Let's see. What's the biggest lesson that type 1 diabetes has taught you? Man, biggest lesson. Honestly, the biggest lesson is our bodies are capable of so much, so much. Like, our bodies just, I think that on a daily, without even knowing, because it's just so habitual, we underestimate the abilities that our beings, like the human body, has. And when I really think about it, like, I have to sometimes, like, trust my body. I don't trust my body most of the time for good reason. Like,
it's trying to kill you.
To me, it literally shit the bed. Like, it was like, meh.
I'm done.
We're going to fail you. So I don't trust it. But at the same time, I have to be like, oh, shit. Like, okay, it's still doing what it needs to do. Like, for it to have, yes, I needed to control the blood sugars and everything, but every other, like, organ kind of was like, okay, like, all hands on deck. Nope, we're missing one. All right, we still got it. So I think it's being able to, in the moments of where you feel like your body has failed you and you feel like, why me? Don't go that route. Like, it never helps. It never is a good way to go. And trust that, like, our bodies are incredible things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning that, like, through watching Ravenna 2, and just our bodies are awesome. So I think that was, like, one of the biggest lessons. The other biggest lesson is to be okay with your little quirky shit. If it means that it is how you navigate through your life and it brings you peace and happiness, and it is how you are able to be your best version of yourself and your healthiest person, you need to be confident in that, because some things you just can't change, and that is okay. Like, you're not going to be like everybody else because we just weren't shaped like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's taught me to be confident in the quirky shit that I have. And that's something recently that it's taught me, is that it's okay to not be like everybody else. I've been trying to be like everybody else for so long. I think I've been trying to be like, I'm going to eat more than 200 plus carbs.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too.
I'm going to do these mud cakes, and I'm going to eat this, like, huge, like, dinner or whatever after a show and make these slutty brownies. And I always felt so insecure that I wasn't doing that. Like, I was like, I want to fit in. But, dude, I fit in just fine. Like, I'm cool in my own way. And I'm okay with how I fit in. Like, the things that make me fit in, I'm okay with. Because the things that don't make me fit in make me live a little longer.
That's hilarious. That's really funny. It is. It's really funny. I mean, to say it like that, you know, it's literally like, if everyone ate a slutty brownie, like, your parents would be like, if your friends jump off a bridge, will you? And you're like, no, I don't want to die. I don't want to eat the brownie. I don't want to die.
Right. And I think I had to really come to grips with that. Like, why do I want to do these things? Like, it's not going to do any good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's okay to not fit in with some things. Like, it's okay. Yeah, you don't always have to be in the cool kid clan, because most of the times, the cool kids aren't that cool. Like, they're lacking in a lot of things. So, yeah, that was another thing.
Mm-hmm.
One more question that I did get was, do you ever experience diabetic burnout? And yeah, man, like, I am am tired some days where I just want to be like, I'm done. I don't want this. Take it. I'm so done with this. But I can't. Like, I can't rid it. I can't give it away. There are some moments that I absolutely have with Matt where I will cry and I'll throw my own pity parties and he'll tell me, but you know what, Danica, like, this is something that is manageable. And it might, you might not be able to control every little thing with it. And there's no such thing as a perfect diabetic. This is something that I will not perfect, which is very hard on my ego because I want to be able to. Some things I can't, but it's manageable. And I am learning to be okay with that. But yeah, of course you have burnout days, right? Like, I think it's exhausting. Like, I don't want to. I've taken away a lot of the burnout moments. Like, I have sacrificed a lot of things when it comes to food to get rid of the burnout moments. And because I think my mind would explode. Like, I would just be so tired of measuring. And who wants to be, well, in my perception, who would want to always be around somebody that's like, oh, you made blueberry crumb cake? Do you mind if I just, like, pick out the blueberries and pick out the crumb and what did you use? Like, yeah, so to decrease my anxiety, to decrease their anxiety and not make them feel like shit as I pick apart their blueberry crumb pie, I just choose not to, and I choose to be more vibrant in other ways. And that has helped me to decrease the burnout.
Yeah, I think that goes back to my favorite book, Never Take Anything Personal, because first off, if I made blueberry crumb cake, which I probably never will. I don't know. I'm a big cook now. If I made you blueberry crumb cake because I feel that that's how I show love, but I get all mad because you're not eating it, and then you're like, wow, you're trying to poison me because you made me blueberry crumb pie? Like, thanks for trying to kill me. Like, honestly. It's not, right. It's just open communication. You just need to talk a little bit more and be like, oh.
Right. Exactly. I did have one more question that was sent to me, and it was a very interesting question. Do you find that doctors immediately, when you have other symptoms, signs, other like health concerns coming up, do you find that doctors always go directly to your diabetes instead of digging and doing more research? Yes. In the past, I absolutely have. So again, the thing that has gotten me away from that is not putting diabetes up first. So I will go to, say, a new naturopath. Like, I am seeing someone that's new in Atlanta, and diabetes was the very last thing that I said. And I gave all, like, little symptoms, little, like, gut health stuff happening, like, adrenal health, and then she discussed all of that with me. And then I said, oh, and I do have type 1 diabetes. And I was thankful that I, like, switched it. I didn't lead with type 1 diabetes because with any autoimmune disease that you have, you're more susceptible to have other autoimmune diseases come up. And you're more susceptible to have some thyroid conditions come up. Gut health issues come up. Gastroparesis is a big one where your stomach doesn't really empty. It is a delay. A lot of issues happen with your nerves. So with gastroparesis, it's a delay in the emptying of your stomach. So a lot of type 1 diabetics do, if not controlled, have other things that do come up. So it's very easy to say, oh, this was caused from your type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So yes and no. I think that, yes, I've had doctors absolutely, when it was applicable, say you need to manage your type 1 diabetes a little bit better. And at the same time, I've had other doctors just see me as a whole person and be able to focus on, let's just put diabetes to the wayside first because you are controlled and managed. Let's put that on the side first.
Yeah. Anything else you want to cover before we kind of wrap it up for today?
I think a big thing is that at the end of the day, understanding people is really, really important if you want them to be a part of your life. And you're not going to see eye to eye on things. You're not going to eat the same way. You're not going to have the same view of food in the same light. You're not going to have the same view of exercise. You're not going to have the same view of movies. Like, you might like comedies. I might like thrillers. Like, it's just everybody is different. If they mean a lot to you and you want them to be in your life, then you need to take the time to genuinely understand. And then with that understanding, be able to know your emotional reactivity to some behaviors that they may do, so as to kind of play like with that relationship. So I think that this is something that I'm learning more and more and more. And Matt has taught me, and I always thought, oh, stop with that mumbo jumbo. But it makes a lot of sense. My emotional reaction that is inside is probably something that only is what I'm dealing with. And the person's intent was probably not to bring out that emotion in me. Mm-hmm. So any conflict is usually an opportunity for you to look inside, understand your emotion a little bit better, know the audience that you're interacting with, and then make sure to organize like your emotions and behaviors accordingly. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for like output. If I know my audience and I know that a behavior might bring out an emotion that I'm not trying to get, then I need to check myself and I need to understand that if that person is important to me. So I know that was a lot of psychobabble, but at the end of the day, a deeper understanding of the people that you love is really important. And if you have questions, ask them, because you're never going to know and you're always going to assume. Mm-hmm. And assuming literally does bring conflict to really important relationships. So ask questions, be understanding, listen really well, and check your ego at the side.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh. Excellent. What is one thing that you're thankful for today?
I'm really thankful for, I'm thankful for my husband. I posted this thing. I have tried to be really, really kind to him lately because I come off really bitchy. When I am PMSing, I am horrible, Chrissy. There are things that, like, I say that I just don't understand. Like, there's this, I have an alter ego, and it's a PMS ego. Her name is, like, Daniqua. Daniqua comes out, and you better believe it, you are in trouble. Like, I have hoops on, and I snap my neck. It's not good. So I have been so mean to him, and for no good reason other than I'm PMSing. Last night, he was so nice to me, and I apologized, and although he threatened to just take me to the firehouse and drop me off there, he appreciated it, and I appreciate him being like, are you PMSing? Okay. Understood. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm thankful for him right now and his ability to just, like, laugh in the face of Daniqua.
There you go.
What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for being strong because my child, I went to go get dog food. And carrying a big bag of dog food that's like about 30 pounds. And then my child, who's about 30 pounds. And I was carrying the dog food and she decided to just lay on the ground and do like snow angels in the middle of the pet store. And wouldn't get up. So I'm like, awesome. It's a pet store. She's laying on the ground. I'm like trying to pull her up by her hood and like put my foot under her butt and like get her legs under her. So I'm holding this 30-pound dog. I don't know why I didn't put it down, but I was, like, holding on to that, trying to pick her up, and then I just left her there. I left her, and I went and checked out. Like, I could see her the whole time, but I just left her there.
Yeah.
And I tricked her, and I said, wow, there's so many cool toys over here at the checkout. And she came running over, and I grabbed her, and the guy, like the teenager at the whole time is laughing, that's checking me out. So I got her in one arm and then I grab the dog food in the other and I'm like, they're like, you need help? I'm like, no, I'm fine. Grab them both and like holding them. And then she goes, where's the toys? I go, I lied. And she goes, you lied? But then it was really cute because as we were walking out, I was like, hold on to the bag, help mama. And she's like, ugh. And this is the best part. So if you're not a, if you're not a parent, this won't be funny for you at all. But if you're a parent, there's this TV show called PJ Mask. And each, there's three characters and each one has a superpower. And she said Gecko Muscle because one of the characters super strength. And she just said Gecko Muscles. And she does this all the time now with the house. Like she'll try to pick something up. It started with just the laundry basket that's super easy to pick up. But she'd go Gecko Muscle and like act like she's struggling to get it up. It's empty, so it's even funnier. But yeah, so I was able to carry her and that and laugh at her gecko muscle as I was walking out of the food, the pet stop.
Yes, muscle. Yes.
Yes. So, and I had a really good lift today. So, all around good muscles. All right. You can reach us at championchat360@gmail.com and you can reach Danica personally for any of those other questions. Obviously, always consult a doctor, a physician. If you're having any symptoms of diabetes or any kind of worries about it yourself, we hope you have a good day and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.